It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Atamarie, Rachel. I am good, thank you. We got a bit of rain, didn't we?
Not enough.
I tell you what made me spit text. I learned that in the top of the Coromandels, they got 520 millimetres of rain. And I think rain gauge said probably 40 to 50. And hey, we could have done with that 500. Maybe not that much, actually, because the flooding that caused in the Coromandel and would have caused here. But I've got the latest figures, actually. Let me just look them up for you. We're up to about 44%, I think. And the good news is that we are way down on the demand. So the demand's dropped. Yeah, the dam levels are 44.58%, and the demand yesterday was 382 million litres a day, and the target set by Watercare was 420. Mm-hmm. And on the rolling 7-day average, it's below the 420. But please, nobody listening to this, imagine that's any cause for complacency.
Not out of the woods yet, no.
No, we're normally at 77%. And if we just, you know, it just refuses to rain heavily in Auckland, and that will create problems for us this summer if mm-hmm. we don't get that rain.
Well, we've got some big topics to talk about this morning. We're going to touch base on the big protests we saw across the country yesterday in response to the killing of George Floyd in America, and also our armed police trials that we've seen in New Zealand. We're going to start with that, but we also want to touch base a little bit on what's going on with some ways of reopening Auckland, perhaps, to exchange students from overseas, and also public transport and what's going on there. But let's start with the big protest action that we have seen across the country. We saw the biggest one in Auckland yesterday. And I wanted to start by asking you, Phil, what are your thoughts on the armed police trials that we've seen in New Zealand? Because, of course, in the last couple of days, we've seen that they were used most often for traffic stops rather than serious crime, which has been quite criticised. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, what's happened is that they trialled it and people were armed, but they weren't going to just sit around doing nothing, waiting for an armed call out. So when they did their normal routine work, they were carrying arms. And that raises questions about, why we want to move from the existing model of armed offenders squad, where you've got a specialised trained group. My general feeling about arming the police is I think it's a matter of pride that we in this country haven't had to arm our police other than for groups like the armed offenders squad. Yes, I understand the police argument that there has been more problems. The obvious example was the Christchurch mosque. But I'd really want to be convinced I'm not convinced that the routine arming of police is necessary, and I'm not convinced that we need to move up another stage. I think that by and large, you know, we're very grateful for the policing that we've got in New Zealand compared to a place like the United States. I think that what happens in the United States is not just George Floyd, it's happened forever. You've always had a situation, mm-hmm. and we've seen it. You know, I mean, what's changed actually is we now get the videos. So we got the video of the African American jogger going through a white neighbourhood jogging, and two guys, a man and his son, shot him because there'd been burglaries in the neighbourhood, and he was black, therefore he was probably guilty. I mean, that sort of culture is just appalling. And the culture that the police have, and, you know, we've seen time and again, there was a African-American guy running away, no threat to anybody, running away from the police, and they shot him, you know, five times in the back. That is appalling. So I understand why the demonstration happened here. Very unusual for New Zealanders to be demonstrating about what's happening internally in another country. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that shows, I think, social conscience. The worry that I have is the obvious one is, we are still in level two. I think too many of us are behaving like we're in level one, and certainly that happened. There wasn't, you know, I'm just looking at a picture of it now. There's no social distancing there. And while I'm really hopeful that we've got through this, no new cases for, 10 days, and no community transmission for 50 to 60 days, The rules are still there, and it's not, you know, it's really not fair on those that are observing the rules to see other people deliberately ignoring them. So, you know, my thought is, you can't really organise a demonstration and maintain social distancing. Might have been better to have a virtual demonstration, but it happened. And, you know, I understand the passion of people there, well-intentioned, but still concerned that we maintain our observance of social distancing until we get to level one.
It's kind of brought up some interesting questions about where the line is in terms of how much the government's lockdown measures and alert level measures can also dictate democratic freedoms like the right to protest. Perhaps that is something that's coming through here. We're seeing a bit of criticism from Winston Peters, perhaps unsurprisingly, and perhaps Cabinet today will be discussing moving to level one on the 8th of this month. Are you hoping to see a fast move, or are you still wanting a sort of slow and steady approach?
Look, I want an evidence-based approach, basically. I think the government's strength has been its timing so far. Sometimes it's been ahead of public opinion, you know, as council was. When we remember what happened when we said, look, Pacifica won't go ahead, Polyfest won't go ahead, and, you know, I got a whole lot of criticism around that. You know, I don't think anybody now retrospectively would criticise the decision to postpone those events. When the government stopped people coming in from China, you know, everybody said, you know, there's the 400,000 Chinese tourists. But, you know, I think the lockdown was correct. The question is the timing coming out of it, and the Prime Minister will be getting advice today at Cabinet from Ashley Bloomfield. Sometimes that advice errs on the side of caution, as you'd expect the medical profession to do. I think people are probably demonstrating in their behaviour now that they feel like it's level one. Most of us aren't doing things differently from what we might have before. You know, I wouldn't have gone on that demonstration, not because I was against the demonstration, but because I didn't think it was appropriate while there was still a requirement. And, you know, I'm an elected representative. I've got to lead by example. But I wouldn't be surprised if the government felt that with the track record we've got that they could bring level one forward a bit. But we know from a whole lot of other countries overseas, if you act prematurely, you can get a second wave. So it's following the evidence, but also, you know, making sure that people are willing to comply. Just on the last point, on your point about, you know, taking away freedoms, look, we all willingly gave up our freedom not to go out and mix with people, because we all understood the reason why the government was doing it. They weren't autocratically denying us our rights. They were doing what they, on the best evidence available, believed was made it safer for us, and we agreed. You know, I just remember all those American demonstrators demonstrating for the right to mingle with others, and a whole lot of them coming down with COVID-19. So, you know, look, I don't think the government has breached civil rights, and I don't think the public thinks that. I think we believe that what they did was for a good reason.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the calls that the Auckland Council has been making for reopening some channels with exchange students, for example, coming back to study in the city. Now, what is the thought behind this, and what's it also going to look like, Mayor?
Well, I had a discussion with Chris Hipkins, Minister of Education, and we both agreed that we would only be promoting something that could be done safely. That was the paramount reason. But secondly, we both acknowledged how important international education was for New Zealand and for Auckland. For Auckland, it brings an income of $2.8 billion. And what I've put up to them, working with Auckland educational institutions, but specifically Auckland University, was a plan to allow degree students back in on a trial basis, subject to the same level of quarantine that returning New Zealanders face. So that's 14 days where they would be under 24/7 supervision segregated in a particular hostel, or maybe even in a hotel. And the emphasis would be on being able to do that with minimal risk. But why am I keen on it? Look, as we move out of the risk of COVID-19 being the big threat to us, the big threat to us will very quickly become loss of jobs, loss of income, inability to, you know, for people to be able to earn a living in the way that they used to. And that means that there's a whole lot of areas, international education included, that's got to be part of the recovery plan. So sooner or later, these students will come back. What I want to test, and working with government, is whether it can be sooner rather than later, with proper precautions to mitigate against the risk of any spread of COVID-19. I think that's the sensible way to go.
And how are you imagining that that could be enforced, for want of a better word, just to make sure that a quarantine process is taken seriously?
Oh. In the same way, look, Auckland Council's had the responsibility up till last week of coordinating the return of 10,000 New Zealanders to Auckland, and we've kept those people in hotels, and we've, you know, there's been one or two breaches, but by and large, most people have followed the rules, and I don't think there'd be any problem with getting compliance of some of these degree students, the predominantly coming from China, that they would obey the rules. They're here not for a short term, they're here for a long term, they're here for at least 3 years. But I was, you know, looking at the, you know, the people in the city centre advisory council and the heart of the city are saying, hey, international students are so much part of the life of the centre of the city. We're suffering greatly. I think Auckland University is losing $100 million in income because of this lockdown. That means they're having to lay off staff. That's not desirable. Of course, having made so much progress, we want to lock in that progress on defeating COVID-19, but the next battle and the important battle to come is making sure that we reduce the job loss, we get incomes back to people, we get the city moving again, vibrant and prosperous again. So, you know, that is the big task ahead of us for the next 12 months.
And just before we let you go, I just wanted to quickly touch base on public transport fare reductions that we're seeing in parts of the city. What's the deal with this, Phil, and how can people access it? Do they have to do anything different?
Yeah, look, it's a great idea, which I absolutely endorse. Throughout June this month, we're now on the 2nd of June, there'll be a 30% discount on AT hop fares for adults who travel on weekdays after 9 a.m. and before 3 p.m. or after 6:30 p.m. Until the end of service Monday to Friday. Tertiary students will also get a 30% discount on the adult hop fares if they travel during the daytime or the evening off-peak period. And why are we doing it? The first thing is with the distancing requirements from public transport, we can still only get people up to about 43 capacity on our buses and trains. Any more than that breaches the distancing rules. And the more people we can get moving outside that peak period, the easier it is. We have to put less buses on in peak time, and we can maintain social distancing. But also, it'd be good for the long term. If we can get people that can work staggered hours, start a bit later, miss the morning peak, that's great for preventing the level of congestion in the city. So we're really keen to do that. And, you know, what does it mean, the 30% discount? Well, you know, say you're travelling from Papakura to Sylvia Park, that's $2 off your fare. You're travelling from Avondale to Queen Street, that's $1 off your fare. From Orewa to Fanshawe Street, that's nearly $2 off the fare. So big savings. And we're calculating we might get, if we say we've got a 5% peak shift, that would mean that we'd need less 20 to 50 buses less on the road during peak hours. And that wouldn't that be great?
It would be fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Phil. We will talk to you again next week.
Look forward. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank
Have
you.
A good week.
You too.
Cheers. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
It certainly was.